Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a new episode of The Quill. I am your host Raul, and welcome. As you can see, we have a few maps here on the screen. Hope you guys are watching live. If you're not and you're listening to the audio version, well, I have the map of Romania in 1941. If you're watching on YouTube, hello, please don't forget to like, subscribe and all that. Do the same thing on the podcasting platforms and on Twitch as well. Thank you. Now, this is the map of Romania after they lost big territories in 1940. They lost it due to the fact that they were allied with French, and as we all know it, after the French lost, the Germans and the Italians shook hands and gave the northern Transylvania to Hungary for reasons. And then life struck badly for the Romanians in northern Transylvania, as there were massacres over massacres, and trying to kind of adapt Romanian lifestyle to the Hungarian one, including names and, you know, even the education through major changes in the educational department, as they taught Romanians to speak Hungarian, and they basically punished those that wouldn't obey or wouldn't try to follow rule. So it was a bleak time in Transylvania. John, my grandfather, was just 5 years old in 1940, somewhere around Cluj. And after the invasion of, and you know, the gift from the Nazis and the Italians of northern Transylvania to the Hungarians, his father just left him and left the whole family, four brothers, without him, and four or five brothers and sister without him, and a lonely mother. So you can only imagine what life is for a child, a five-year-old child, without a father that just disappeared one day. A refugee in such a horrible war, which was the World War II. And not just that, but you can imagine that the whole of any Romanian peasant that was living back then was basically tragic, since they couldn't really do anything about it, because how could a simple Romanian peasant do anything against a whole army and against what turned out to be horrible people? So after that whole thing in 1940s, basically Romania turned the tides. General Ion Antonescu got to rule over Romania with an iron fist and joined the Axis, which is baffling, honestly. And but then again, what choices did Romania have when, on the one hand, Hitler was promising that through a few trade deals he'd help Romania regain Bessarabia and Transnistria from the USSR, and you know, having, on the other hand, just a bloody losing war with what was at the time the power of Nazi Germany, having, you know, conquered France, Belgium, Holland, the Netherlands, Denmark, Czechoslovakia, half of Poland, and so much more. And not just that, but you can imagine that being, you know, in the 1940 wasn't really okay for anyone, since by the end of the 1940, you know, they were beating one after another, like, European power, with even in September Italians invading Egypt, and in October the German troops entering Romania, and Italy invading Greece, and, you know, so by that time everyone could, the Nazi Germany was quite openly split, and without even a problem, having win after win after win, and no one could really stop them until May. But that's you know, that's something else. We'll get there. Good. So imagine now you're just a lowly peasant that lives from the tits of what's nature, and having to take care of your brother's sister, mother, by working land and trying to dodge bombs and bullets, being on a literal battlefield next to Cluj, which at the time was one of the biggest cities in Romania. As I told you, in 1939, Cluj was the fifth largest city in Romania. And, you know, it's something horrifying that gives you chills down the spine, having to think that, you know, you have to somehow try to survive through all that, have to, you know, run your ass off at 5 year old to get food, to be smart about the way you work your lands in such a way, or steal your food, or do whatever it needs doing so you don't fall in the hands of, I don't know, Hungarian or German soldiers that might just kill you for shits and giggles. And even though the at the end of the 1940, at the end of the year, Romania joined the Axis, and on November 23rd, 1940, I don't think the tragedies in Transylvania really stopped there, nor did the, you know, the persecution of certain groups of people after, because Ion Antonescu wanted to really instill Romanian nationalism in the people, in the territories he ruled over, and that meant that propaganda was at a very, very high level. That meant that punishment for not abiding was at a very, very high level, because the more nationalistic it looked, the more powerful he would be, as any totalitarian regime works. And You know, that meant that whatever remained in the south of Transylvania wasn't having quite a good time either, even with their brethren, so to speak, up north. And you can only imagine what tragedies there might have happened and not many talk about. Romanians aren't quite the best at either keeping the record straight or keeping track of anything. So even the things I found from the dossier that I got, and even through my searches, what I got isn't exactly accurate most of the time, because being in a period of war, everyone wanted to have their propaganda out, their story straight. There even is a video with a Romanian voiceover. I don't know how it survived, but it's about the Romanian counterattack against the USSR, and it says there that the Russian propaganda has fallen to what is the the Romanian propaganda came to the salvation against the Russian lies and freed the Romanian people from Bessarabia, something like that. And that's simply ironic. I don't know what your opinion on that is, but I find that simply ironic. And now you can try to contextualize that in the willingness of the Germans and the Axis powers, right, in 1941, to try to invade Russia and pull a quick stop to what was and turned out to be the biggest, scariest power on the continental Europe against Nazi Germany. Because even today you can see that Russia is massive. They aren't exactly leaving Siberia empty, because that means that they're leaving a bunch of natural gases and oils there. And why would you do that? So when Germany basically attacked to invade Russia, it was to quickly gain their resources, their oil, and to try and cut them off, cut the head off at least fast, because anything that was after Moscow and Stalingrad and all those major cities was barren land that wouldn't really have the power to fight back. So that was very, very important to Hitler and the Axis power. So while Romania tried to survive by somehow allying with the Axis power, trying to preserve what was left, even though they lost a third, they thought that they'd at least recover Bessarabia, which, interesting thought, we all know it didn't pan out the way it did. And here's where we have the second and third map. So this was still in the 1940, and here's, by the end of 1941, Romania regains Bessarabia and part of Transnistria. which is very important. But even with the help of the Germans, they don't get back the northern Transylvania, which remains under, you know, strong Hungarian rule. So that means that Romania basically is helping the Germans and is trying very much to appease the Germans, but not just that, as in they're fighting strongly against them. And I can show you some videos, and I have some videos here for your entertainment. No. Let me choose them right. And this is, I think, extremely rare, but we are lucky to have it because of the Germans. This is a video of Bucharest in 1941. And I'm sorry if you're an audio listener, but you know, it's quite interesting to see that. 1941 was a very interesting year because not only did the Romanians, together with, you know, Nazi Germany and stuff like that, fight back against the Russians and got quite far, but they also managed to start basically doing horrifying things in as Holocaust and the programs, so to speak, where they just off a lot of people at once, and not just Jews and, you know, but also Romani people and whoever might have been, you know, exceptional and out of bounds in their terms or regards. And while Romania was actively participating, so was Hungary. But you know what that meant? That meant that also in Transylvania these things were happening, and they were rampant. There were many, many places throughout Hungary. I'm sorry, I keep saying it in Romanian for some reason. Through Hungary, that were shipping Jews to Auschwitz, from Târgu Mureș to Gheorgheni to like Cluj, Oradea, and the other big cities that were like big marketable centers, where they would, you know, tie up trade roads and stuff like that. And of course there were a lot of Jews, and they were deported massively and fast. And while even here in the 1941 footage you're seeing, it seems like everything is nice, you have to remember that after 1940 Romania was basically in a depression, because they were first of all cut off from their ally in France, and then they succumbed to basically losing a third of their territories and population, right? So what does that mean? That means that the GDP and the income and the taxes have fallen too. And of course, being in a time of war and being, you know, under invasion, it meant that you couldn't really do much, because whatever trade routes you had, whatever plans you had, they'd simply squash you. And this is Timișoara, one of the cities in the western Romania. Let me show you where here's here. This is where Timișoara is. on a map, and this is also footage from, you know, World Film Heritage. They're really, really great. I'm really grateful that these exist, because whatever footage Romania has, they have it kept secret, and you don't really see very much of it. And I even got the first episode of this podcast copyright claimed because it had some footage from 1939. Yeah, so you know, now I can't basically imagine what is like to run through bullets. And you have to consider that living next to a giant city like Cluj, well, giant for Eastern Europe with over 100,000 people, is something extraordinary. And having, you know, like railroads close, and being next to one of the main roads into the city, that meant that you were in close danger, because the battles usually don't take place in the cities, they first take place outside of them at the entry points, and then it becomes an assault if you're losing territory and men, and then it goes into the city where you take over. And this I'll show you when we get there how Cluj looked in 1944 after the big bombardments, and it's gonna be another very nice and interesting story to tell. And again, it was something extraordinary, in my opinion, living in any part of Romania, but explicitly in Transylvania, because living in Transylvania was basically a gamble, especially as a fatherless child, where you did nothing but dodge bullets, dodge any kind of danger. And imagine being the mother of a 5-year-old child and trying to protect it from all and any evil. What power can one woman have against soldiers, any soldiers? Not just now, but since forever, honestly. And it's terrifying to know that you could sleep tonight and overnight they could simply barge in to your like house and take you away or kill you or do anything, especially in rural areas. As much as many people like to think that people might stick together, but how often do they really stick together? How often do people actually care and, you know, don't betray you? And we'll see this as the season progresses, because it's what happens when push comes to shove and being put under a lot of nasty pressures from people and from a regime, and trying to find a way to survive. And you see on Hotel Ambassador in Bucharest the Nazi flag next to the Romanian flag very nicely. In 1941, this was already under Antonescu's rule, so we already have all the symbolism in the center of the city what was once known as Little Paris. So life in a city could move on easily, more easily. Life in a community of 1,000 and a bit people must be terrifying when you know that any few soldiers can mow you down like they did in that other village where they killed 80, 85, 100, 125, 150 people. It's a reality. It's a reality that you cannot think that you might survive as a 5-year-old, as someone that just lost their father. This, what you're seeing right now, is what a typical Romanian family looked. They had some cows, they were working lands, they weren't soldiers. And especially a child that couldn't have known better. How could a child know better than, you know, anyone at the time, honestly, especially on a battlefield, especially without a father, left alone, stranded? Who's gonna tell you what to do and who to trust when you can't read because you're 5? When the only thing you know is to eat and maybe do some yard work. You barely got out of your diapers. You barely learned how to read, how to walk and talk. What about reading? What about fending for yourself? What about any basic necessities? It just couldn't be done, could it? And that was the life. That was the life of a 5-year-old in Romania. Actually, of all children that were living in a similar situation. And he was lucky. Lucky because he was born in the wrong, no, actually in the right religion. That's all that separated him. The religion he was born in separated him from, you know, not being killed, deported. I can't even think. Having livestock, cows, chickens, rabbits, anything stolen from you because you're 5, because you can't be helped by anyone and you can't help yourself. No one's gonna give you a gun and give you a fighting chance. No one cares. Then the Hungarians were happy they got their territory and they could do whatever they wanted. Change your name, beat you, kill you, who cared? It was war. You're just a victim. That's all you could be in war. Oppressed? Nah, just a victim. Collateral damage. Wrong time at the wrong place. That was the life someone actually lived, and that was the life of someone I actually knew. And he was lucky. And he was lucky. You see lives of soldiers on the battlefield, in movies, in TV shows, in books. You never read about a simple child that just wanted to live. That's all he wanted. He wanted a simple, normal life. But he never got it. How could anyone get to live a normal life? When by the time you're 10, you live through a world war, and it doesn't get better. Because by the time you're 20, you're under a nasty ass regime. That was life in Romania. Whether we're talking the Huns, Ottomans, Russians, Romans, there was always someone. You look now at refugees and you can't comprehend what they think. Honestly, you hope that the children don't remember, and that they, if they escape, have a chance at a normal life. And you look at the adults and you know that whatever help you give them, they're not gonna be close to the same person they were. And well, that's not just one of those things where you can see, yeah, it's just life. When it's war, it's not just life. When you know that someone is doing evil deeds and screwing with people out of his own ego and need to feel fulfilled, you can't just say that's just life. Because it's not a comment on a random video or thread. It's someone's life. And those that downplay any violence, any death by weapon, I don't think they understand. I don't think they appreciate what they have. And I don't blame them. Why should I blame them? There's no reason to. Because how could you? And the thing is, they were all bad back then. All bad. If you think the good guys won, no, they didn't. There was no good guy. How can it be a good guy? And they were all doing the same thing. Same atrocities, the same shit. Over and over and over. Now, how could just A simple boy tried to live a normal life when there was no life to live. Honestly, I admire him. That's why I'm telling this story. That's why I'm telling these stories. I mean, I would have been screwed. No, fucked up. Not screwed, fucked up. If I was in his position, having my father live at 5, having people die around me, bombs exploding, mines on the ground, you wouldn't know if you stepped on it, because you'd be dead. And fucking luck he didn't. Because I don't think you realize, but the Romanians didn't really either fall back in Transylvania back then. It was war. It was a war crime. And at the end of it all, Antonescu decided to join with the Nazis to fight the Russians. The plan didn't work. Well, not as he would hope. Because Germany started to lose in 1941. Started to lose, and there was nothing anyone could do. Because while Greece surrendered in 1941, while Yugoslavia surrendered in 1941, the German attack on Tobruk is repulsed in 1941. The first actual failure of the Germans. And that's just the beginning. Because things got way more complicated in 1941. The Americans froze German and Italian assets in America, and later Japanese too. And things didn't calm down either in Africa or in North and East Europe. Here's just a throwaway number that I see on this list I have here. September 19th, 1941, Nazis take Kiev. September 29th, 1941, Nazis murder 33,771 Jews in Kiev. Now, through spread through these troops were Romanians, and this was after this lovely video where they basically that I quoted earlier, where they show how they liberated Bessarabia and Odessa. So they were moving towards Transnistria and, you know, regaining like land and stuff. And here basically they arrested a bunch of traitors. The dead bodies you saw, it was a Romanian soldier that was killed in battle. These were the Romanian troops and the Orthodox priests that came back. This was a propaganda piece. They were proud. They were proud that they managed to do this. They were proud that they got here. What they don't tell you, well, actually they do tell you, even in this video at the towards the end, they actually show you how, like, they rounded up all the, they say, just Russian troops that were fighting against them. But I don't think so. I really don't believe that it was just Russian troops, because of course the reality of it was probably more complicated and probably more fucked up. So that means that someone somewhere, see, here they say that they found a bunch of Romanian bodies killed in basements around the city, and they dug them up and gave them a proper Christian burial, because the, see, and these are Russians and Ukrainian people here, guilty of helping you know, the Soviets. And you know, they were saying that the Russians and the Soviets were ungodly and didn't have any gods, so they were finally bringing God back to this place and people were rejoicing and stuff like that. But so were people in Cluj, for example. Last time I showed you a video of Hungarian people rejoicing in, and well, what I can imagine, many people being forced to be happy. Maybe same case here, because they were, there were a bunch of Ukrainians living in there. So you can only imagine what happened to those Ukrainians as well, because they weren't basically sent back home, because they say it in this film too, where they admit that many of them were sent to prisons and, you know, concentration camps to work and do stuff. And here they were regaling Romanians as heroes, because they started making foods and took stuff away from the communists and gave it back to people. And it only took Romanians a few days to actually do all this and put things back into their natural order. So you already see that the propaganda machine is working on both sides. No, I don't know if they showed it already, but there's a part in this place where, see, these are all Ukrainian people, not actually Romanian. These are all Ukrainians living whatever homes they got and just going fuck all, who knows where, because the Romanians came back and took that land and sent the people away, you know, to show that they're merciful and stuff. Just like here, where the Romanian troops help gather grains and stuff. So it's absolutely fucking fascinating how propaganda works. Now, speaking of propaganda, this was obviously working in Transylvania too, where you can imagine being a child, a six-year-old child, being told that the Hungarians, these are our heroes, they liberated us from the rule, under the rule of the Romanians, after, I don't know, 50 years, something, 100 years, whatever, 1,000 years, doesn't matter. The point is that all these propaganda machines were only that, propaganda machines, lies. They weren't really telling any truth, you know. They were either like, oh, it's been, even here they said, oh, it's been 20 years, stuff like that. 20 years since what? It's been a year since you lost the territory. It didn't take you 20 years to take it back. So, yeah. It's fascinating to see how life works. And even here they say in the movie that, oh, after 20 years there's again ceremony, sermon, whatever, Christian, you know, stuff, and you here they were Christianing all these ungodly children that were under the Bolshevik regime. So yeah, together with their German brethren were moving east, because sure, why not? And you know, they were helping the Nazis fight this fight. And the tragic thing is that many Romanians died or were captured and sent to Gulag. But I know of people that were sent to the Gulag in Siberia, for example, and were, you know, they got back safely to Romania. Here they say that everywhere the Russians go, they just set up in flames as they retreat back to their motherland. You know, and it was a thing the Russians did when they knew, like, they were gonna lose the battle. They were trying to burn down stuff, so, you know, it wouldn't really help. Here's the propaganda part I was telling, and here are the, as the voiceover says in this movie, people actually helping, gladly helping, and you know, the Romanian army and their saviors. And here's that ironic part that I was talking about before. So you can imagine what kind of life you must live to not know under whose rule you are, and change that, those changes to happen fast. And it's just such a thing, weird thing, or having to grow up with the paranoia that, you know, the neighbor might stab you because he just feels like it, or you know, crazy fucking stuff you wouldn't actually consider even today. Perfect timing with the ambulance or the police. And yeah, police. So it's just fabulously horrible and horrifying to think that anything you do, anything you'd say might actually be against your life. Because if you don't accept the terms you're given, these are the concentration camps where they gathered all the Russians. That's what they say, these are Russian soldiers and, you know, Russian helpers. And the previous ones with the people marching, those were also Russians, prisoners sent back to Russia, I think. But, you know, and it's fascinating. I don't think that one was a Russian. I don't think this where was he? I don't think this guy with a big beard and, you know, what was really Russian. I don't think many of them here were simply Russian. That's my humble opinion. But, you know, it's interesting to think that it wasn't, you couldn't live a normal life. I don't think even if you were rich, you could live a perfectly normal or safe life. Because you have to think that anyone could just simply straight up take you out. And they, I don't think they cared very much. Good people were few and far in between, in my opinion. At least that's what the records say. One of the bloodiest wars. And even today, I don't think we'd survive another act like this. It's terrifying to think about it. I don't like being really inconvenienced. Now imagine having no choice but to live outside on fields. Surviving somehow through the bloodiest war, one of the bloodiest wars. It's absolutely terrifying. Having no shelter over your head. Because you have to think that even though he had a home, He couldn't really say that it was his home. Because honestly, when you live through and surrounded by enemies, can you say that you're home? Like, really home? And that you're safe? They just murdered a few people over the hill in the other village. Why would you be safe in your own house? Why would you trust that foreigner that came into your house on the planes you play and shot at people you knew or killed? We saw them kill. It's absolutely horrifying how little we care about human life.
I suspected something when I saw you go into the mayor's office. So I sent my boy across to find out. Monsieur, shall I tell you your name?
Imagine having nothing, actually. Like, nothing. Because even your family, you can trust that it's gonna hold, that it's gonna be, that it's gonna exist for another day. So how are you gonna manage as a 6-year-old during a war? A war that you never wanted to take part in, live? A war that you were born next to? Because you was born in between two of the most gruesome wars ever. As a child. It's something that shakes you to your core if you actually take a moment, you know, taps and think about not having whatever it is you have. Trying to appreciate the little, yeah, it can be better, but you could live outside of a city that might as well not exist on your own, even though you're with a family that might as well not exist because you live between foreigners and you don't know what they want. You can barely speak because you're 5. So whatever thoughts you have, whatever puny power to break pencil you have in those arms, it isn't gonna help you. So you try to live your life running away from all and anything, not trusting any and all things. You are born and your name was changed, because of course it was. Why wouldn't it be? And life happens, and there's a whole world around you, and there's a whole world you don't know about. So you don't know how to live, who to believe, why. It's something that no one should live through. No one. And to end this episode in December comes around. Moscow is abandoned, Germany attacks. Right after Germans take Rostov, a week later, Soviets retake Rostov. German attack on Moscow is abandoned. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. Soviet launches major counter-offensive. December 7th, 1941, a day later, after the Soviet counterattack, Japan bombs Pearl Harbor. Hitler issues the night and fog decree. The US and UK declare war on Japan. Remember, Japan was huge and an empire. Hitler declares war on the United States, because of course. But Hitler takes in on December 19th, 1941, complete control over Germany. And Germany's army. And here's where we're going to end today. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We're gonna be back soon. We're gonna be back next week with a new episode of The Quill. I am Raul, I am your host, and I want to thank you for watching or listening. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe, and see you next time on The Quill.